let that sun breathe a little bit, Steve.
I was going to say, I feel like I should be saying thank you to Ken Alexander.
You should. Good morning, it's Dave Blair on 720 WGN. So an all-new, all-vintage swimsuit issue, sexy, featuring a full-color photo of Elizabeth Taylor and more than a dozen Golden Age stars dressed for the fun in the sun. And if you'd rather read it for the articles, Nostalgia Digest magazine always has wonderful stories and vintage features that will keep you reading for hours. I always look forward to when my new edition comes in the mail. And joining us is the editor-in-chief of Nostalgia Digest, my buddy Steve Darnell. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, David.
I love it. It's right here. See, I wasn't being sexist.
Thank you. Camille, this camera
showing
two.
It up there. There we go. Camera two. Yep. It is Elizabeth Taylor. I love that you do a swimsuit issue every year. It's tradition with Nostalgia
in
Digest.
In a sense, yeah. I mean, we don't do it every year because we come out four times a year, and I think, you know, let some of the sun soak in.
Yeah.
But okay. This is our fourth. We did the first one 10 years ago.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. I've always, anytime I ever worked for a publication, and in my career I've worked for comic book publications, I've worked for medical publications, mm-hmm. but in every instance we would always say, boy, wait till we do the swimsuit issue.
And
there are some that were hugely influential in that regard. But then when I became publisher of my own magazine, I thought, well, there's no one else to ask as to whether I can do a swimsuit issue, so let's do it.
That's my favorite, the Marilyn Monroe.
The very first
I'm pointing
one.
It up. It was the first one in 2007. That was like, and when I saw it, I thought, brilliant. Because, I mean, everybody has their swimsuit issue. And
well, and somebody
you
got to
join
me,
in.
Somebody told me that photo of Marilyn Monroe in our very first swimsuit issue was taken by Ouija, which actually would be too perfect for words, the street photographer.
Really?
I don't know if that's true or not, but I mean, it is a great thing. That's you look at that photo, you look at the photo of Elizabeth Taylor, and sort of like, think of all the time and effort that was put into making it look like these people were having a ball, even though they were probably there for 20 minutes to get dressed, you know, get in the position, be photographed, and get out again. But
you got, like, Mary Martin in here. You Lucille Ball, which is cool. You also have Budden Lou and James Cagney. So
James Cagney.
There's a little sexy for
it
everybody.
It is co-ed. Always has been co-ed.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that I loved when, I mean, like I say, we kidded about, let's do a swimsuit issue with the dental publication.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that, yes, these photos, there were lots and lots of stars in the 30s and 40s and 50s who would pose in swimsuits. And there were various reasons why. I mean, sometimes if you ever look through old newspapers, you'll see they all had the Sunday supplement.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, even without a Sunday supplement, you could go through a Chicago paper, the Tribune or the Sun Times or whatever, and you'd just see a photo of a young starlet in a swimsuit, and it's sort of like, you know, Debbie Reynolds now starring in such and such. And here she, and by the way, here's a photo of her in a swimsuit.
And I love that you put Debbie Reynolds in here because I got to tell you, it so bummed me out that she passed. Biggest collector of Hollywood memorabilia. Did you read about that?
In fact, I did not
really know how deep her love was for all that.
Years ago, I was in Las Vegas visiting my sister, and I was there with, of all people, Bill Griffith, the creator of Zippy the Pinhead.
Okay.
We were both out there for a conference, and my sister took us both to the Neon Graveyard, which is where
a lot of
the old signs, and one of them, of course, is the sign for Debbie Reynolds plays, and just this big sign that says Debbie. And it was incredible. You're right, because this is, for those who don't know, this is where they took a bunch of the old signs from the Vegas Strip that no one was using, and they're just in a lot. I think now they've been moved to like a parking garage sort of place. But
a lot of them are just sitting in the sand still, no? I mean, there's a museum
sort of like
that.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it is the coolest, unexpected place in Vegas to see.
Oh, yeah. But I remember being photographed by Bill Griffith just standing around this stuff, and then it turns out that he was using me as a model for one of his Zippy strips because he just needed a human figure to stand next to the head of the lucky leprechaun.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, pretty surreal experience, but it was great fun. And
but, I mean, I was watching the, you know, just talking a little nostalgia with Debbie Reynolds. HBO special that was done with her and Carrie Fisher, really what their life was. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's amazing day-by-day little walk through their lives. And right before she passed, she really sold everything that she had because she collected everything from the Rat Pack, all of their outfits from Ocean's 11 to Dorothy's shoes to Elizabeth Taylor's Cleopatra costume. I mean, she had everything. But what's really interesting, what I've learned about this business, they don't appreciate history like you think they would, like restoring, keeping, putting it on display in Hollywood. She could never get anyone to put it on display, so it was only her private... Yeah, because we have the same issue with the Broadcast Museum here. As many of TV icons that were came from Chicago are here, you can't get a dime out of any of these people. Like, they just don't care. They were throwing out, as they do at radio stations and TV stations, just tons of tapes of shows.
Oh, sure.
And throwing them in the garbage because they're taking up room, or they would tape over them. Like, where's the love for the history of what you've built here?
I remember once writing about some show, the National Barn Dance, I think, for the museum,
yeah,
for the Radio Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the anniversary.
And my memory is contacting the station that had been the home to that show for many, mm-hmm, many years. I won't mention it's the call letters. But of course, you know, whoever I got on the phone, I might as well have been talking in German for all that.
WLS.
Yeah. No, it's it's, they've been through so many changes of ownership that it's sort of like history, bah. And I think that's a shame. And that's one reason I love to do what we do. And that's one reason I love being on the radio, and I love what you guys do on the radio here. Because, yeah, this stuff has to be preserved. And, you know, I suppose if you're talking about sounds that are 60 and 70 years old and entertainers that had their heyday 70 and 80 years ago, yeah, maybe not everyone's equally interested in sharing that. But for me, and that's one reason we did the swimsuit issue, is because that's a part of history, too. Not in the sense of, I suppose primarily in the sense of saying, you know, look at this photo. Here's this photo of Debbie Reynolds in a swimsuit. She's posed to the nines. It is so impeccably laid out with the umbrella and the ukulele, and all this time and effort that went into making this look, mm-hmm, incredibly casual. And more to the point, when you see these photos of people like Mary Martin on the boat, or Gloria Graham wearing her swimsuit and holding her big hat behind her, that all this time and effort went into making it look like this, like being a star was the greatest job in the world. And think of how many people's lives and perceptions were changed by seeing that, seeing a photo of Ida Lupino sitting under a palm tree and thinking, oh, that's the life I should be leading.
Well, especially during the war years. I mean, people look for something like this. And speaking of war years, another feature you have about Abbott Costello, during the war, there were so many spokespeople for so many different things during the war to support the efforts and war bonds and I love, this is what I love about the magazine, Steve, is you just find some really interesting angles to talk about somebody from a vintage time. So this is a great article.
We're very lucky to have a lot of interesting writers.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they all send enough articles to where you can actually sort of pick and choose. And mm-hmm, I always say that putting the Nostalgia Digest together, David, is like, it's like if your job was laying out baseball cards to make a team.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can say, hey, what's this article? That's really good. What's something completely different from that? Let's put that next.
Yeah.
So, yes, we've always been lucky in that regard. And, you know,
how the West was won on radio, remembering those pioneering talents who brought Western audio drama to life. I mean, you think about that's where some of the biggest Westerns that even was on television, they started. I mean, people got to remember that. A lot of these things started on radio.
Oh, right. The Lone Ranger, Gunsmoke.
Yeah, Gunsmoke specifically.
Brilliant show.
Was on the air.
It was on for 9 years on radio and then for decades on
30
television.
Years total. I mean, you think about that. Yeah.
Yes. And then thankfully, like I say, someone will come out of the, will come to us and say, hey, would you like an article about Paul Muni?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, my goodness, who else is publishing those? So yeah, the fact that in the case of the swimsuit issue, we're actually talking about a grand publishing tradition of its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about this in the magazine that, you know, the swimsuit issue, as we know it, ladies and gentlemen, started because it was February 1964 at a time before ESPN,
mm-hmm,
and there were no sports going on. Just ponder that, will.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, we should do something. So they put a swimsuit issue together. And then over the years, and I have to give credit to, there were some issues that were very influential on us. There was Spin Magazine actually did a swimsuit issue, which I always loved because they would have modern stars like, you know, the Bangles and Motorhead. Mm-hmm. And then they'd have photos of like Johnny Cash in 1959 in a swimsuit. And it's like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it became a pretty wide open field.
But unexpected, too. There's always somebody I never knew about that I will learn about from reading this. A mid-century's night team, how discovering a used baseball scorecard a lot. I remember how important those scorecards were when you went to a baseball game.
And this fellow, Claire Schultz, found this scorecard from the 1950 White Sox. And, from there, I mean, yeah.
Great story. Yeah.
But again, you're right, just finding the ads and just sort of seeing, oh my gosh, these businesses, these small local businesses could afford to advertise in a White Sox program.
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine doing that today?
Right.
I can't.
No, not at all. The first two articles in here, favorites, talk a little bit by Bill Jackson. You have talking about, you know, really his very beginnings and, you know, BJ and the Dirty Dragon, the Giggle Snort Hotel, a cartoon town for, you know, different generations that grew up with him. Mm-hmm. And we had done an event with him with the Broadcast Museum some years ago when it was his last trip to Chicago. You know, he was just getting older.
Sure.
And he said, you know what, I'm not coming back. This is it. And asked him to do this, and just my quick story here, we did it at a theater in Oak Park, and he brought all the puppets back, because we were closed at the time, and they were rubber, and they were falling apart, and they were deteriorating. And he went, and we shipped him out to California, and he rebuilt every single one of those, the Dirty Dragon, the Blob, all those, I mean, meticulously. And then my favorite was when we went to put him on stage and I was helping him prepare everything. He bought like, he goes, go get those bags over there. And there was a bag full of plungers. And that is how he stuck them up the puppets and onto the table to make them all stand themselves. But that's the type of prop work in the early days of television. You figured out how to do it. And you used whatever you had.
Oh, yeah.
To make it work, right?
We talked with Bill for one of our podcasts, the Nostalgia Digest podcast, which is also at our website, nostalgiadigest.com. And, yes, and he talked about the fact that, you know, people may remember the Cartoon Town or the Giggle Snort Hotel, but, oh, my gosh, there were 20 years of broadcasting before that.
Yeah, of course. And then Harry Shearer, you had a conversation with him. You're actually going to air it on your show on at the end of the month on July 29th from The Simpsons.
That's right.
So, you know, you sit down, you have these conversations, and you also share some of this in the digest as
well. Yes, and speaking of which, I want to thank you for making me feel so at home here today because with your previous guest was my WDCB colleague,
Wayne Messmer. Wayne, yeah.
And if I can, I want to tell my Wayne Messmer story.
Yeah, sure.
Wayne would be embarrassed. It's probably good he's left.
and sleeping.
He's standing outside.
I did let everybody know that was taped. But anyway, go ahead.
Wayne in the 1970s used to host an old-time radio show on WXFM.
That's what Carl told me, too, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
yes, yeah. And I pestered him so much because I loved old-time radio even as a kid, and he was so incredibly patient. He took every phone call. Sometimes I would call him with some tidbit of information, and bless his heart, he'd mention on the air, and he'd mention me on the air.
I love hearing that,
he was always so gracious, and I always remember that, and I was always grateful to him for that. And then, of course, in 2015, both you and he were part of those were the day's 45th anniversary
show
at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Yeah.
So thank you as well. But no, Wayne has always just been very, very gracious to me over the years. And I'm so grateful for the chance to come here and thank him because he's on Sunday nights on our station.
Yeah.
And I'm usually never there on Sundays.
Yeah, right.
So
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Cool dude.
Very nice. So, yes, it's nice to see all these interesting people you meet through the things you love.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking off air. You came in a little bit early about that. I find myself, because I get a little bored with television over the summer, even though there's some summer shows that are out there, some dramas and some cable stuff, a lot of it's reality programming. They brought back Battle of the Network Stars, which I used to love in the 70s because it was every station, but now it's all ABC actors and really C and D actors that are in this show. And I end up watching, like, I'm binge watching a little Wonder Years. I have Fred Savage on Wonder Years. I mentioned the Lucy show, which was the Mr. Mooney years of Lucy on television. So we're watching some classic stuff because I hate when my kids watch Nickelodeon and Disney because some of those sitcoms are god awful. They are the worst written programs on the planet. They are just terrible. Laugh track to death. And I thought about even in the 70s growing up, you know, I believe Sonny and Cher was a summer replacement show. I mean, they actually put some love into some of that, and it really started that tradition in radio. There was a lot of summer replacement shows that were big shows that began.
Well, of course, radio in those days was all live.
Yeah.
You know, nothing was pre-recorded. And so if a star, Jack Benny or Edgar Bergen, went off the air after 39 weeks for a summer vacation, you had to have something there to replace them. And yes, I mean, Jack Benny over the years, he had the Aldrich family was a replacement for him for a couple of years. He had a couple of years, there was a musical program with Guy Lombardo. You know, Martin and Lewis were on during one summer at least. I mean, you're right, all kinds of, you had to come up with something that would hold a listener's interest so the sponsor would be able to sell their product.
Right, that was the other thing too. The sponsors like Johnson's Wax through Fibber McGee and Molly, they were still there sponsoring it.
They sponsored Fibber and Molly for 39 weeks, but they were going to be on 52 weeks.
Victor Borga, whoever it might have been, Harlow Wilcox would always
stick around.
Yeah,
and in fact, on Are Those for the Days program in August, we're going to be presenting a summer replacement show for Fibber McGee and Molly that starred Meredith Wilson.
Yeah, I just saw that. Meredith Wilson musical review.
Right, who, of course, went on to compose The Music Man and a lot of other great, great music as well. But, yes, the fact is...
Escape, December Bride, The Aldrich Family, Boston Blackie, A Date with Judy. Some of these were...
That's right. Boston Blackie was a summer replacement of Ramus and Andy, I think, and we've featured those. But, oh, yeah, because you had to have something that would hold listeners' interest, but also something where you could... feasibly, it wouldn't be the end of the world if it didn't click.
Right.
You know, that it's only 13 weeks, so.
We're talking to Steve Darnell from Nostalgia Digest magazine. You can go to nostalgiadigest.com to get a subscription.
Oh, that's right.
Can I give 1 year, 4 issues, $17. I think that's a steal.
Bless your
2 years, 8 issues, $30. You can also call 773-769-6575. That's 773-769-6575. But as I said, everything at nostalgiadigest.com. And you also make appearances. Always wonderful educational conversations. You got a couple things coming up. Bensonville and Northbrook. Talk about
that. Yes. Well, over the years, I've put a bunch of different presentations together that relate to the golden age of radio. We did one starting a couple years ago about comic book and comic strip heroes who went to radio.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's the one we're going to be doing in Bensonville on July 23rd, a week from today.
Yeah, a week from today.
2 p.m. And then the following Thursday, July 27th, I'll be at the Northbrook Public Library at 2 p.m. to talk about radio and the Great American Songbook, which is wonderful for me because, and also because it's a chance to feature some very rare clips from the likes of Cole Porter and George Gershwin. These guys didn't do a lot of radio because they were composing, they were writing for Broadway and for Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so to have this clip of George Gershwin hosting his own musical program, it's incredibly rare and it's really a thrill to present it. And the audience gets to sing along with Cole Porter.
I love that.
So, yes, time well spent if you happen to be there. And yes, the libraries and the places where I've gotten to speak have been incredibly gracious. And it's been a real treat to get to meet listeners.
Yeah,
you know, it's very easy. I mean,
we've talked about this.
You're here at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You assume people are listening to you, and it's not just this bubble.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's a different thing to say, I'm going to be in Bensonville on July 23rd and see people who show up because you said I'm going to be in Bensonville on July 23rd.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And you can find out all Steve's appearances and, again, get a subscription to Nostalgia Digest magazine. It's a swimsuit issue right now, fall one coming out. When does the fall one come out?
Weeks from now.
Okay, so you can get you probably can sneak in your first edition, but you want to go to nostalgiadigest.com, and again, you can call 773-769-6575. That's 773-769-6575, or again, at NostalgiaDigest.com. Always a pleasure. Love the magazine.
And bless your heart, David.
We'll see you soon, pal.
It's a day. Take care.
All
man.
Right.
Thanks.
Take care, buddy.